Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Mike Cosentino, my co-host, is traveling in the Northeast. He'll be back in a week or so. We're talking today with the candidates from LD6. When it says LD, that's the Legislative District 6. Those are the candidates for the State House and the State Senate. Before we talk to them, I would like to say that, you know, we're having in Sedona campaign by Tea Party folks to try to take over the Sedona city government. It's ongoing. They renamed themselves in 2014. They celebrated the demise of the Tea Party so they could call themselves something else. It should have been a sad occasion if it was a real demise. So I would like urge everybody to investigate, study, look at the home rule issue. Home rule, the voting against home rule will cut the Sedona budget in half. It will destroy all our ability to support nonprofits. It'll reduce the budget to basically sewers and a stripped down police department, etc. So please check that out and investigate what's happening in Sedona. And I think you'll find that there's an interesting story there that we've talked about before. So we have, Wade Carlisle, who's running for the state senate. We have Felicia French, who's running for the State House, and Bobby Tyler, who's running for the State House. Now, for the State Senate, there's one person running, right?
That's correct.
Okay. But for the State House, there's two of you.
Yes.
Yes, there's two open seats.
So if you like, go ahead, Bobby.
There's one open seat, yes.
Okay. So there's an incumbent, but you can vote for both you guys, right? Yes. You like both of you, which I like both you guys. you can vote for two. Tell us a little bit. You have been on the campaign trail. You guys started about a year ago. What's it been like? You campaigned together? You talk to each other? Or what's the story? Felicia?
Yes, it's been fun. I really enjoyed the campaign with Bobby and Wade. They're like brothers to me now. After a year, we've had our ups and downs a little bit, but we really get along great. We agree on 99.9% of the issues, little differences occasionally, but nothing that we can't work out. And it's just,
does that actually help with the stress of the campaign for all this driving you guys do and all these talks and everything? Does it help that the fact that you get along?
I feel it does. It helps out a heck of a lot because it's like Felicia said, we're like our brothers and sisters. Of course, we're going to have the good and the bad, but spending all this time together really built a really good, strong bond that we have here between all three of us.
Yeah. Well, and the practical reason is that it multiplies our time. Felicia spends a lot of time in Payson, her hometown, and Bobby and I, we'll go house to house in Holbrook, and we carry the same pamphlets, promoting all three of us, and that's what our strategy is to really multiply our force in the district.
So you've actually met with the Republican candidates. They were actually willing to talk to you guys. We have, I think, probably two of the worst representatives and state senators in the state, and Bob Thorpe. Ask another Tea Party senator from Glendale to drop a suit against the city of Sedona that would interfere with our election, would interfere with the longstanding contract between the city and the Chamber of Commerce. It's been going, I don't know, 20-plus years. And also, they did this surreptitiously. And he pretended that he didn't do it. So if any of you folks are interested, go to the Red Rock News website. You'll find an audio of them, their interview with Bob Thorpe, a deceitful slippery interview with Bob Thorpe. And, Felicia and Bobby, you're running against this guy. So that's to the good. So when you met with them, are they friendly? Are you guys get along with your Republican competitors? Or
Yes, I've met with both Stuart McDaniel, Walt Blackman, and Bob Thorpe, and they're all very pleasant gentlemen. I can't say anything negative about them in that respect. I just think they're Bob Thorpe's voting record and his background is that's what you need to go by.
He has an absolutely terrible record, Bob Thorpe does. Yes. You guys are running against him. Bob Thorpe really tried to injure Sedona city government. And the situation here is, you know, it's odd to be Democrat for an environmentalist and be on the side of the Chamber of Commerce because there's been tensions before. But the extreme attacks from Bob Thorpe and the Tea Party people have thrown everybody together. So you've got environmentalists and Republicans and Democrats and the Chamber of Commerce and the travel industry all fighting to keep the Tea Party off. And that Bob Thorpe, you know, who you're running against, would join in and really try to damage Sedona is I'm surprised, even though I know his record. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about your positions, and let's start with Wade. You talked in earlier today about public education and the importance of it in the state of Arizona.
I think this really drives down to the difference in ideas between Sylvia Allen, or really just the Republican Party, and my personal views, is that public education is important to the state of Arizona. And what they've really started on a trek is privatizing the public education fund. And it's not really a privatization. It's really a crony capitalism. It's exactly what you don't want. They've never offered a true privatization program. So that's where our differences come down. It's really a difference of ideas. And so while I have a pretty good rapport with our Democrat or Republican candidates, we have very differing ideas in regard to public education. I believe that our public education system is fine, that we can educate students, that we can perform at a high level. It's just simply a matter of funding them so that they can accomplish those goals.
Felicia, agree with Wade on this.
Yes, our education system is the number one thing we need to address because Arizona is so low on the ladder nationally in almost every category of our teachers' pay, graduation rate scores, all that. And so we really need to focus on the state legislature in funding it right up front. And equally, no matter what zip code a child is in, whether they're in Paradise Valley or Pine, they should be funded equally.
Let me just make the point, folks, that these state legislators can make a difference in public education. It is the job of the state legislature to set the funding for public education, to set the rules for public education, to set the rules for this sort of, what to call it, the sort of, like we call it, crony capitalism, this thing where you're in the state senate and you make big bucks over sending people to private school. All this stuff that would be a scandal, I think, in a lot of states. Go ahead, Bobby. What you got?
I'm sorry. I was thinking about something else I was going to talk about. What was the question again, sir?
Well, let's look at this. When you go to the state legislature, mm-hmm. you can do something about public education. It's not some sort of theoretical deal where you just talk about public education. When you guys get to the state senate and the state house, you can vote on bills that will improve public education. Mm-hmm. And if all three of you are elected, it will shift things in Arizona in the direction of public education. So people in our area can actually make a real difference in the funding and the mandate that public education has in Arizona. So it's like being on a jury. I mean, you can have a lot of opinions. When you're on a jury and you say guilty or not guilty, it makes a difference. When you guys get down to the legislature, it's going to make a difference, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's gonna make a big difference because for one, the first question I want to answer is you ask about have we met our opponents last week? We had the opportunity to meet Mr. McDaniels and also Mr. Thorpe, and just like Felicia and Wade have said, they're very nice gentlemen. It's just our beliefs are completely different. We're looking at serving the people of our area instead of going around and doing things to hurt the people of our community. And so when we get down there to the state capitol, there's a lot of things we can do. And first thing we're going to do is, like Felicia and Wade and we've all been saying, is to fund education, because we know that the education is our backbone of our society. And so that's one of the first things that we're going to start working on.
So it's important. And then the other thing I heard you folks say is that you're interested in when I was in New York, we had a Republican senator who wasn't very popular in a lot of ways, but they call him Senator Pothole. And because he was Senator Pothole, because if you needed something done, whether you're a right wing or left wing or whatever, you could go to Senator Pothole and get the pothole fixed. You guys are interested in fixing a pothole, I take it. Felicia?
Yes, of course. But potholes are important because of wear and tear on your vehicles and safety and all that. But it's not the number one issue. But I really firmly believe we can cover with funding if we properly look at the tax base and how much and where the money's going first. You have to do like an audit to see where we're bleeding out, where the extraneous money's going before we can address everything. And so we can fix potholes and take public education and health care and all those things. We can take care of all the issues if we properly, you know, monitor our budget.
Transportation's important, right?
Yes.
And being able to get around the district. I know you guys are driving vast amount of miles in our district. It's a big district. And so having good transportation is probably pretty darn important. Bobby, what do you think? You commuted down to Phoenix for many years, right? From Holbrook.
Well, I was commuting when I was working for Springerville. I was averaging 190 miles a day, commuting back and forth to Holbrook. And so when you look at the conditions of our roads, we need a lot of attention on our roads. But we got to look at our whole infrastructure and our whole area of here in northeastern Arizona. One of the things that Vice Mayor Carlisle and myself and Felicia, we were looking at is our infrastructure. And when you're looking at the broadband, we need the broadband up here in our area. When you look at the natural gas situation here in our area, we have a 4-inch natural gas line serving the Holbrook area. And then you look at St. John's, there's no natural gas lines in there. And so when you're looking at that, the infrastructure here within northeastern Arizona, we have a lot of work that our current lawmakers have forgot about us. And they've not only forgot about us here just recently when the interstate ran through us in 1979-74, that was the start of them forgetting about us.
It strikes me when I think about Sylvia Allen and Bob Thorpe, who are both running for re-election, is that they seem most interested in serving an ideology and being ideologically correct with the sort of Tea Party far-right movement. They seem more interested in that than the nitty-gritty of helping their constituents. And it's not like, there's some wealthy towns in our district, but there's some towns that don't have a lot of resources. And it seems to me that state government could help all our little cities and towns and rural areas.
Oh, definitely, I agree. And that's what's nice about having all three of us candidates are from rural areas. I grew up in Phoenix, so I understand city issues and all that, but I've also lived full-time for over 5 years in the small town of Pine, less than 2,000 people. So we definitely have different issues and problems in the rural areas than the people in Maricopa County do, for example. And broadband, like Bobby mentioned, is one of them. Potholes is another one. Education, health, all of those issues are magnified in a rural area. Access to affordable health care, providers, all that we don't have and that the city has. So we have to look at it a different way, and funding needs to be looked at the state legislature on making sure we don't forget about the rural areas.
I'm thinking that, you know, when I used to talk more to Republicans before they got sort of replaced by Tea Party types, they had the same problem that Democrats with, is all the focus is on Maricopa County. Right. I mean, and that in Tucson. And so what they would tell me is they had a really hard time getting the attention of the Republican Party, the state Republican Party, to be interested in our issues up here. And Democrats had some of the exactly the same problems of getting interest here. How can you get the focus so that we get a fairer piece of the action in the city. I know that Maricopa has a huge population. I'm not downplaying that. Like Felicia's originally from Phoenix, but and, you know, I think it's about, what is it, 5 million people there or 4 million people there, and our little counties don't have anything like that. But how can you get, how can you represent not only your constituent but the interests of rural Arizona, Wade? Do you want to speak to
that? Well, in all fairness, the truth in most issues, Maricopa County and Pima County, who are the main metropolitan area, raises the majority of the HERF tax, for example. All of rural Arizona doesn't raise enough money to fund what it funds. So we're essentially subsidized by Maricopa County and Pima County. Now, the other benefit that they have of having rural places with lots of public lands up here is that they like to come up here and recreate. And we want them to come up here and recreate. And that is what they're paying for. So our transportation system is not just our transportation system in Sedona. It's the state transportation system, of which they're also subsidizing up in Sedona so that you can come to Sedona and visit Sedona, which is a great place. And the same with all the rest of the national forest that runs virtually the entire length of the state. So, yes, we have to take into consideration the needs of the metropolitan area. And when it comes down to budget time, to say, hey, you can't forget the area that you guys recreate in, to spend some money up here. They're still the same needs. And as we move forward, as we consume resources down there in the metropolitan area, we're going to have to think long-term, planning-wise, is expanding growth into these more rural areas to help develop the state, simply because they're consuming vast amounts of resources in one small area, and the biggest resource that's going to run into a problem in the near future is water.
What's happening with water, folks? Felicia, you want to address the water issue, or Bobby? Yes.
Well, water obviously is a problem throughout the Southwest and Arizona as well. The drought, it looks like now we're getting a lot of rain because of the monsoon season, but it's not making up for what we've depleted. And our aquifers are running dry, our lakes are running dry, and it's going to take a lot more rain and snowfall to replenish them. But the problem we need to look at is growth. We can't have growth in either agriculture or business or population without a steady stream of water, a reliable source of water. So it's definitely something we have to look for. And part of the recreation, they make a lot of money. In addition to the fact that we need to drink water and grow our crops with water, we also recreate it in it as well up here. And if that's gone, that's going to go away too. And that's the tourist dollars for the rural area as well. And as well as the, you know, people from the southern Arizona like to come up here and cool off in our water and mountains.
They do, and it seems to me that people in Phoenix treat Slide Rock and Oak Creek almost like it's going to the ocean, like they're going to the beach.
Yeah.
And you see them in all their swimsuits, and they're carrying all their picnic stuff, and they're just having a great old time. It's stressful for Sedona because of the road situation, because the roads have really not moved up to meet the demand. I mean, we've got Phoenix I believe it's the fastest growing metropolitan area, maybe the second fastest in the country. What other issues are important to you guys? You can do something about what I'm fascinated, candidates, is that you can actually do something if elected about issues like public education, like infrastructure. You can actually do something for the people of our district. And I think we have incumbents who are, I wouldn't say deluded, but they're just absorbed in their ideology and doing things correctly to their ideology rather than thinking in a practical way about what's needed. Bobby, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, they're not thinking about a lot of things. One of the other ones that I was just thinking about that we're not thinking about is the housing. The housing issue that's here in our area, we're having a crisis just for affordable housing. And what are we going to do about affordable housing?
Certainly a big issue in Sedona. I mean, our whole affordable housing and complex, and all our apartments, the guys I used to work with, all those would be turned into Airbnbs for more profit. And that's fine, but there's no housing in Sedona for an awful lot of the people that work here. So, for example, in Sedona, we've got 10,000 people work in Sedona, but maybe 4,000 or 3,000 of them actually live in Sedona. They have to go from other places where they can find housing cheaper. What can you do, you know, in the state house, Bobby, about having more affordable housing? Is there anything that you guys can do? How would you go about it?
That's a challenge. For me to sit here, Steve, and say, well, I'm going to do this, and this, I couldn't really do that because until we get down there to see exactly what's going on, because we've been having so much disinformation, misinformation of what's going on in our state. And so we would have to have feet on the ground to actually see what we can do for affordable housing.
So you have to get down there, Felicia, to be hands-on?
Yeah, you do. You need to get the stakeholders involved. It's one of the problems we always have with our legislators is trying to make laws and regulations without getting the stakeholders and asking what the issues are. Knee-jerk react responses or solutions don't always work. Most of the times they don't. They have unintended consequences. So we need to look at talking to the folks. Maybe we need to see, maybe regulate what percentage of housing can be Airbnb. That may be one of the solutions. And also having a district that's just looking at each district differently, but it needs to definitely, whenever you have a problem, you have to get stakeholders involved, all the people involved, you know, the real estate agents, the developers, the workers, and see how can we fix this? And because not everyone has all the answers. The key is going to the people who do and who are going to be affected by it and get their input in first before we make any decisions.
So, Wade, for example, have you and Bobby tried to do that in Holbrook, try to bring everybody in the town as much involved in the politics and decisions as you can?
Well, that's the goal. It's always difficult from time to time to get all the stakeholders together in one place and discuss a particular issue. But that's where local control comes in as the state legislature takes more and more local control away, and zoning is one of the big issues. I know that in Sedona and even in Flagstaff, they've talked about creating zoning rules where if it's a residential area, it can only be used for residential and you can't rent your home out as an Airbnb. And in my view, I think that those ought to stay in local control. The state legislature has been taking, you know, even that zoning away from the local areas. So just look at it this way. If you live in an area, say Holbrook, and you want it to look a certain way, and I'm not just saying me, myself, but as a community, we sit down, we develop a general plan, we have all the stakeholders and the citizens, and we look at it and read over it and talk about it, and it takes time to develop a general plan. And then from the general plan, you develop your zoning laws. And what the state of Arizona has been doing is saying, well, you're not allowed to do any more of your local planning. We're going to plan for you from the state capitol. And that is as anti-democratic or anti-free, and I'm really big about freedom in the state of Arizona, but they're driving against that. They're telling the rural areas, these vastly different communities that are different in culture, different in location, different in elevation, different from, you know, we're not desert, we're high desert here. And they're telling us you're going to do everything the way we tell you to do from the state capital, and it's all going to look the same, homogenized. And I'm really against that. I like that I come to Sedona and it looks different, that it's the zoning is set up so that the buildings are red to try and reflect the culture and
natural surroundings
and all of those things. You go to Williams and it doesn't look anything like Sedona. But it appears, the way the state legislature is going, that they're wanting to take that all away from us so that Williams is homogenized along with Sedona, along with Phoenix, and there's nothing different between them because they're doing all the zoning down in the state capitol, and that's what it looks like.
So what are our current representatives doing about this? Bobby, what are they doing? I mean, what's Bob Thorpe doing about this sort of protect our interests? What's Sylvia Allen, who's been a state senator? Does she actually live in the district? I guess she's kind of moved here, hasn't she? Mm-hmm. And what are they doing about it to protect the interests of not just, you know, not Democrats, but and not Republicans, but the citizens?
Well, I guess he's reaching out to other people down in Glendale to try to support the people of Sedona, which is really not working because he's not looking at the interest, and so he's really not looking at the best interest here for the people in our area.
He's not. It's kind of a shock to have someone being against college students voting who represents a college town, and who wants to have secret. He wants the freedom of information not to apply to his cell phones and this sort of thing. It's a shock that that's our representative. And then we have Sylvia Allen, who's on the education committee. And I respect everybody's religious beliefs, but she believes the world is 6,000 years old. And she's setting up charter schools to teach this sort of stuff. And her charter schools are rated F. I mean, the schools that she started and then there's all the relatives working and making contracts with these schools, and it's extraordinary. Look, it'd be a big improvement just to have some honest folks like you down here, people who are not feeding off the trough and making $100,000 a year by sending phony scholarship kids somewhere. I mean, you know, it would be a big improvement to have some honest folks. What I heard Felicia say at the talk earlier today was something that you don't really hear from candidates. And let's see if I have your words, Felicia, down here. Oh, well, I don't really have them, but I have you say, have heart. You spent 32 years in the military. I think that you know, that's a tough thing. You retired as a colonel,
yes,
in the military, and you were in Afghanistan, and you've seen a lot of suffering worldwide. God knows what we're spared, a lot of the violence here in our country. But why aren't people interested in having heart? Why don't we have candidates that have heart, that care about other people? Why do we have ideologues instead? Why are people voting for them?
I think really, like I said before, and I maybe sound idealist, I think everyone has heart. I think most people care, Republican, Democrat, Independent. They care very much about other issues. That's just how we go about it. And maybe there's some compassion fatigue. We get inundated with all the horrible stuff going on in the world and locally. And I think sometimes we don't know what to do to fix it. So we pull up a wall, literally and figuratively, to block it out. And that's unfortunate, because I think if you really, like we talked about before, canvassing door to door, we don't just canvass with the Democratic doors. We go to door to door. And it's Republicans too. Then once you start talking to them, they care. It's just they're just tired of hearing it. And I think what the leadership in Washington has done is try to make you fearful instead. Instead of having compassion, it's fear, because it seems easier to fix if you can make people afraid. Let's build up border walls. Let's build up our defense instead of, hey, let's look at the root of the problem. Why are people suffering? Why are people having issues? Why are we having so many immigrants come over? And why do we have homeless? Why are our kids not getting a proper education? Why do we have drug addicts? All those things, they want to just be punitive instead of looking for solutions on preventative. In my medical background, I always look at being prevention as opposed to cures. It's much less costly, and it's a lot, it reduces the number of people who do get ill and the ills of our society just by looking at prevention as opposed to.
What was the statistic, Felicia? I think 72,000 people died of opiate overdoses. What would cause that? What kind of despair would cause people to do that kind of thing?
from what I've read, because I'm very interested in it as a nurse, it's people lose hope and connectedness. And our society, as well as the digital age is for us, and the smartphones and all that social media, it's great on one level to reconnect your old high school friends and whatnot, that you have grade school friends, but it's also caused us to kind of tunnel ourselves, and we just surround ourselves with people that agree with us. For one, that's bad, you know, from a political standpoint, but it's also bad because you don't get open-minded. You don't know what's going on outside your tunnel there of your friends. You're siloing yourself. And I think the loss of connectedness and hope has caused people to do that, to start doing drugs and what we call self-medicating in the military. You know, a lot of people with PTSD, the stress of all that, they either alcohol or drugs, and they're so readily available, the opioids. We've already had problems with drug abuse, but it's gotten worse because of the opioids are so readily available.
Bobby, what's your take on the... I think my co-host one time says, why don't we ever talk about compassion? Why don't we, you know, when people are fleeing these horrible wars and situations, why don't we, whatever we do, why don't we approach it from the point of view of compassion and caring rather than the point of view of fear? Why don't we jump right to fear first?
Fear is the enemy. Just like Felicia said, by chasing, let me start off. Everybody has compassion, and everybody has a compassionate heart. But our current situation is scaring them from showing that compassion, and especially with a lot of Republican are afraid, and they're afraid to show compassion because when you look at the current president, and one of the things he says is compassion is weakness. Compassion is not weakness. Compassion is just the basics that we show for everybody. Why are they not standing up and just being who we are? It's hard for me to even see this, or it's just hard to understand why someone doesn't have compassion.
Why is there so little interest, Bobby, say, in doing something like an issue like homelessness? It seems to me that, I mean, a lot of people talk about it, but why is there so little commitment, public support for doing something about homelessness? I don't have any solution. I'm not expecting you to have one, but why is there so little interest in dealing with the issue? Why is it being kind of, you know, spread under the rug, or whatever the phrase is?
That's a tough question when you ask someone why. First thing you use, they don't have that voice. The homeless doesn't have the voice like you see the different groups from NRA. They have a voice. The homeless doesn't have that voice, and that's one of the things as a Democrat and as just as the mayor of Holbrook and as Bobby Tyler, I want to be that voice. We have to have that compassion for everyone.
So we're all into this together, right, Wade? You guys are into a campaign together, and Americans are all into being in America together. And whatever your, you know, it sounds trite, but whatever your race or age or nationality of your ancestors or your current nationality background, we're all in this together. We're all in America together. It's our country, right? That's the bottom line.
That's correct. And I'd like to, just as a, for example, go back and revisit the whole charter school issue and the whole voucher program, which was found to be unconstitutional by the state Supreme Court, and they're now called empowerment scholarship accounts. And the reality with that program, that there are certain state legislators that have companies that they funnel the empowerment scholarship money through, and those guys, it's those private companies that distribute those accounts to the students. Well, they take a 10% fee off the top. And so you have state legislators enriching themselves off of the taxpayers of the state of Arizona. And that I find to be completely unconscionable that that's even allowed to be done. And I think that even Republicans, if they understood that this was going on, that would upset them. Now take, for example, our charter school system. We have some excellent charter schools, and it is part of the public school system because it's publicly funded. The problem that I have with the charter school system that it is operated under a separate, they're not operated under the public education system or the public superintendent. They're under their own
they're not supervised
department,
as
you will.
Schools are.
Well, they are under a different set of rules that have been given to them that the state legislators provided for them, and they're not even audited as strenuously as the public schools. Public schools have to account for every dollar, and every dollar that they can't account for, they are held accountable to it. They have to answer, I believe it's 46 accounting questions, so that they get to the bottom of exactly where every dollar went and was spent and how it was utilized in a public school system. So if you want to know how much an administrator makes, you can know. It's public information. The charter schools under the state legislature have allowed it so that you don't know how much profit that the charter school owners are making. That information is not even available to us. So we know that they're profiting from it. We just don't know by how much. We don't even know whether those schools are solvent or not. Just this year, we had a school that educated 800 students, and it just closed all of a sudden, and nobody even knew that they were in financial straits. But that's not the case with the public school. You know exactly where they stand with their funding. So I don't care if you're a Republican or if you're a Democrat. If you're okay with people taking your hard-earned tax dollars and making a profit off of it, just tax dollars, I have a problem with that. Now, I'll give you a caveat. I don't have a problem with the way that the transportation system is set up, where 92-3% of all that money goes right back into private hands. But I'll tell you the difference between a bidding on a road construction project and starting a charter school. A road construction project starts with a set of plans that has been developed, and there's expectations from the road base to the asphalt to the smoothness of the road. All of that is spec'd out in the plans. And so once that's spec'd out, and also the contractor has to put up a bond that if they can't finish the job, that the state of Arizona can take their money from that bond and finish the job, even after they've taken the bid.
Seems like a good idea, Wade.
It is a good idea. That is not the case with the charter system. So that is a true privatization where we pay public money with our gas tax. There's a specific set of plans when it's developed, and a contractor bids on those plans, and they make a profit. I have no problem with them making a profit on that. And they go and build our highways, and they do it very efficiently. The charter school system is a quasi-crony type of privatization in which there is no accountability over what do we expect to get an outcome with the students, what is your expected outcome with the quality of teachers. There's no requirement of charter schools to have a certified teacher. There's no requirement of charter schools to have a teacher with an education at all to be able to teach our kids. So there's no standard for what they're supposed to perform at and what the expected outcome of the student. And you take that as opposed to the highway transportation system, there is an expected outcome and an expectation set down for them to perform against. And right. That's what they're bidding for. Right. So this is not a privatization of the education system. It's a crony type of system. And there are charter schools out there that people are making a huge profit on our tax money, and they're not performing better than our public schools.
Excellent point. I want to, I guess, start with Felicia. What can you guys, you don't even know what you can do until you get down there in some way. What can you do to improve rural health in northern Arizona, in our area, the availability of doctors and hospitals and affordable health care? I know people who just throw themselves into the emergency room. They have no intention of paying the bill because they have no money. You know, they can't do it. And it's their life or pay the bill. They choose just throwing themselves into the system and hoping for the best. Is there anything you can do on the state level?
Yes, definitely. One of the things that we need to look at is access to health care providers in the rural areas, which we don't have. So you need to start looking at nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, those kind of things. And also incentivizing people going to medical school or nursing school to would be willing to come resettle here. I know when I went to nursing school in Arizona State and back in the 80s, we had grants for the Native Americans to go to school, and they paid for their full education, but they had to stay on their reservation for a number of years to make up for that. We can do the same thing for our doctors, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and pay for them to stay. And generally speaking, when people do that, they fall in love with the community they're in, and they stay longer. And so you have that continuity of care, which is great. And on top of that, we need to start using our military, our National Guard. When I was there, I was this commander of the Med Command, and we would do missions out like in the rural areas, specifically Tucson, the lower socioeconomic areas. We'd do sports physicals for them. And our soldiers loved it because they're getting paid anyhow by tax dollars because you have to go out and do a mission for that week and you're on or whatever. And then, but now we're helping an indigenous population or the lower socioeconomic community so that can afford to have sports physicals or physicals done. So that's preventative, so we can catch something before it's worse. Then secondly, it's good PR. Those are possible recruits down the road that want to join the National Guard because they were in their community. So it's a win-win-win. That's the whole idea with Bobby Wade and I. We always look for the win-win-win solutions. There's no reason why somebody has to lose. That mentality of I win, somebody's got to lose. Or we need to stop that.
And that's certainly the President Trump. That's certainly his. He doesn't get it. You've got, I guess, 1 minute or a little less each. Any final words before we walk off into the sunset here?
So one of the things I want to touch on is on the trades. We haven't talked much about the trades, and the trades are very important to us as part of education too. Especially living up here in rural Arizona, we were at a meeting last week, and they were talking about cutting some programs because of the cost of the one program that would serve 10 kids compared to a cost of a program that would serve 25 kids. But when they eliminated that one program that automotive program that was serving those 10 kids, I saw that as a disservice to the community, because when you have multiple universities within a 10-mile area and you're going to eliminate an automotive program, but you're going to keep an English program, you just sent 10 kids that probably could not afford to live down there in Phoenix to go down to the automotive program. And so we need to look at what we have here in our area. And so one of the things I was thinking about is why didn't we save that program and save for the trades?
Wade, any thing you want to say? We got a couple of minutes left to our listeners here.
Yes, I believe what you have with Bobby, Felicia, and I when we go to the state legislature. I know they love to paint us as black and white, as Democrats are tax and spend, and Republicans are conserve and save. And I see exactly the opposite of that with the state legislature and at the national level, that the Republicans are very willing to spend. It's just what we're going down there to do is to spend the money that we are already taxing to make sure, to ensure that the dollars go to our public education system to educate our students, that they go on our public roads, that we're not sweeping money away from the HERF funds to prop up other programs, that it's actually getting to the rural areas, to the metro areas, building our roads. And that is what we're going down there to do, is to make sure that these public funds get where they're supposed to go.
Felicia, one minute.
Well, just quickly. Voting for Bobby Tyler and Wade Carlo and myself, Felicia French, you're going to get a very diverse group of people, diverse backgrounds, diverse ethnicity, diverse ideas. But the bottom line is we work well together. We genuinely like each other, and we care about the rural area. We care about all of Arizona, and we have diverse education background. But all of us come together, and we agree on 99.9%, like I said.
I think it would be a wonderful thing to have such a coordinated representation And I think that would be a wonderful thing if we could get the three of you in there and we could have coordination for the first time. Thank you very much for being with us. Listen to all our shows on podcast, vvid.org. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.